This is the Discworld seen from above, its cloud formations circling in long curved patterns. Three dots emerged from the cloud layer.
I can see why travelling doesn't catch on. I call this boring. Nothing but forest for hours and hours.
Yes, but flying gets you to places quickly, Granny.
How long have we been flying anyway?
About 10 minutes since you last asked, Esme.
You see? Boring.
It's sitting on the sticks I don't like. I reckon there ought to be a special broomstick for going long distances, right? One you could stretch out on and have a snooze. They all considered this.
And have your meals on, added Nanny. Proper meals, I mean, with gravy. Not just sandwiches and stuff.
An experiment in aerial cookery on a small oil burner had been hastily curtailed after it threatened to set fire to Nanny's broomstick.
I suppose you could do it if you had a really big broomstick, said Magrat, about the size of a tree, perhaps. Then one of us could do the steering, and another one could do the cooking.
It'd never happen, said Nanny Og, the reason being the dwarfs would make you pay a fortune for a stick that big.
Yes, but what you could do, said Magrat, warming to her subject, is get people to pay you to give them rides. There must be lots of people fed up with highwaymen and being seasick and that sort of thing.
How about it, Esme? Said Nanny Og. I'll do the steering and Magrat'll do the cooking.
What shall I do, then? Said Granny Weatherwax suspiciously.
Oh, well, there ought to be someone to, you know, welcome people onto the stick and give them their meals, said Magrat, and tell them what to do if the magic fails, for example.
If the magic fails, everyone will crash to the ground and die, Granny pointed out.
Yes, but someone will have to tell them how to do that, said Nanny Og, winking at Magrat. They won't know how to, not being experienced in flying.
And we could call ourselves, she paused.
As always on the Discworld, which was right on the very edge of unreality, little bits of realness crept in whenever someone's mind was resonating properly. This happened now.
Three witches airborne, she said. How about that?
Broomsticks airborne, said Magrat, or pan air.
There's no need to bring religion into it, sniffed Granny.
Nanny Og looked slyly from Granny to Magrat.
We could call it Virgin, she began.
A gust of wind caught all three sticks and whirled them up. There was a brief panic as the witches brought them under control.
Load of nonsense, muttered Granny.
Well, it passes the time, said Nanny Og.
Granny looked morosely at the greenery below.
You'd never get people to do it, she said. Load of nonsense.
Dear Jason on Famille, Overleaf on the other side, please find enclosed a sketch of somewhere some king died and was buried, search me why. It's in some village where we stopped last night. We had some stuff, it was chewy, you'll never guess it was snails. And not bad. And Esme had three helpings before she found out and then had a row with the cook, and Magrat was sick all night just at the thought of it, and had a diarrhea. Thinking of you, your loving mum, P.S. the privies here are disgusting. They have them indoors. So much for hygiene.
Several days passed. In a quiet little inn in a tiny country, Granny Weatherwax sat and regarded the food with deep suspicion. The owner hovered with the frantic expression of one who knows, even before he starts, that he's not going to come out of this ahead of the game.
Good, simple home cooking, said Granny. That's all I require. You know me, I'm not the demanding sort. No one could say I'm the demanding sort. I just want simple food, not all grease and stuff. It comes to something when you complain about something in your lettuce and it turns out to be what you ordered.
Nanny Og tucked her napkin into the top of her dress and said nothing.
Like that place last night, said Granny. You'd think you'd be all right with sandwiches, wouldn't you? I mean, sandwiches? Simplest food there is in the old world. You'd think even foreigners couldn't get sandwiches wrong.
They didn't call them sandwiches, Granny, said Magrat, her eyes dwelling on the owner's frying pan. They called them I think they called them Smorgy's Board.
Oh, they was nice, said Nanny Og. I'm very partial to a pickled herring.
But they must think we're daft, not noticing they'd left off the top slice, said Granny triumphantly. Well, I told them a thing or two. Another time they'll think twice before trying to swindle people out of a slice of bread that's theirs by rights.
I expect they will, said Magrat darkly.
And I don't hold with all this giving things funny names so people don't know what they're eating, said Granny, determined to explore the drawbacks of international cookery to the full. I like stuff that tells you plain what it is, like, well, Bubble and Squeak, or
Spotted Dick, said Nanny absently.
She was watching the progress of the pancakes with some anticipation.
That's right. Decent, honest food. I mean, take that stuff we had for lunch. I'm not saying it wasn't nice, said Granny graciously. In a foreign sort of way, of course. But they called it Cuisses di Grinoli. And who knows what that means?
Frog's legs, translated Nanny without thinking. The silence was filled with Granny Weatherwax taking a deep breath and a pale green colour creeping across Magrat's face. Nanny Og now thought quicker than she had done for a very long time.
Not actual frog's legs, she said hurriedly. It's like toad in the hole is really only sausage and butter pudding. It's just a joke name.
It doesn't sound very funny to me, said Granny. She turned to glare at the pancakes. At least they can't muck up a decent pancake, she said. What do they call them here?
Crap Suzette, I think, said Nanny.
Granny forbore to comment, but she watched with grim satisfaction as the owner finished the dish and gave her a hopeful smile.
Ah, now he expects us to eat them, she said. He only goes and sets fire to them, and then he still expects us to eat them.
It might later have been possible to chart the progress of the witches across the continent by some sort of demographic survey. Long afterwards, in some quiet, onion-hung kitchens, in sleepy villages nestling among hot hills, you might have found cooks who wouldn't twitch and try to hide behind the door when the stranger came into the kitchen.
"Dear Jason, it is definitely more warmer here. Magrat says it is because we are getting further from the hub. And a funny thing, all the money is different. You have to change it for other money, which is all different shapes, and is not proper money at all, in my opinion. We generally let Esme sort that out. She gets a very good rate of exchange. It is amazing. Magrat says she will write a book called Travelling on $1 a Day, and it's always the same dollar. Esme is getting to act just like a foreigner. Yesterday she took her shawl off. Next thing, he will be dancing on tables. This is a picture of some famous bridge or other. Lots of love, Mum.
The sun beat down on the cobbled street, and particularly on the courtyard of a little inn.
It's hard to imagine, said Magrat, that it's autumn back home. Garcon, mucho vino avaxi, gracias.
The innkeeper, who did not understand one word and was a good-natured man who certainly did not deserve to be called a garcon, smiled at Nanny. He'd smile at anyone with such an unlimited capacity for drink.
"I don't hold with putting all these tables out in the street, though," said Granny Weatherwax,
although without much severity. It was pleasantly warm. It wasn't that she didn't like autumn. It was a season she always looked forward to, but at her time of life it was nice to know that it was happening hundreds of miles away while she wasn't there. Underneath the table, Grebo dozed on his back with his legs in the air. Occasionally he twitched as he fought wolves in his sleep.
"It says in Desiderata's notes," said Magrat, turning the stiff pages carefully, "that in the late summer here they have this special traditional ceremony where they let a lot of bulls run through the street."
"That'd be something worth seeing," said Granny Weatherwax. "Why do they do it?"
"So all the young men can chase them to show how brave they are," said Magrat. "Apparently they pull their rosettes off."
A variety of expressions passed across Nanny Og's wrinkled face, like weather over a stretch of volcanic badlands.
"Sounds a bit strange," she said at last. "What do they do that for?" "She doesn't explain it very clearly," said Magrat.
She turned another page. Her lips moved as she read on.
"What does Cajonas mean?"
They shrugged.
"Here, you want to slow down on that drink?" said Granny, as a waiter put down another bottle in front of Nanny Ogg. "I wouldn't trust any drink that's green."
"It's not like proper drink," said Nanny. "It says on the label it's made from herbs. You can't make a serious drink out of just herbs. Try a drop."
Granny sniffed the open bottle.
"Smells like aniseed," she said.
"It says absinthe on the bottle," said Nanny. "Oh, that's just a name for wormwood," said Magrat, who was good at herbs. "My herbal says it's good for stomach disorders and prevents sickness after meals."
"There you are, then," said Nanny. "Herbs is practically medicine." She poured a generous measure for the other two. "Give it a go, Magrat. It'll put a chest on your chest."
Granny Weatherwax surreptitiously loosened her boots. She was also debating whether to remove her vest. She probably didn't need all three.
"We ought to be getting on," she said.
"Oh, I'm fed up with the broomsticks," said Nanny. "More than a couple of hours on a stick, and I've gone rigid in the derriere."
She looked expectantly at the other two.
"That foreign for bum," she said. "Although it's a funny thing, in some foreign parts, bum means tramp, and tramp means hobo. Funny things, words."
"A laugh a minute," said Granny.
"The river's quite wide here," said Magrat. "There's big boats. I've never been on a proper boat. You know, the kind that doesn't sink easily."
"Broomsticks is more witchy," said Granny, but not with much conviction.
She did not have Nanny Ogg's international anatomical vocabulary, but bits of her she wouldn't even admit to knowing the names of were definitely complaining.
"I saw them boats," said Nanny. "They look like great big rafts with houses on. You wouldn't hardly know you're on a boat, Esme. Here, what's he doing?"
The innkeeper had hurried out and was taking the jolly little tables back inside. He nodded at Nanny and spoke with a certain amount of urgency.
"I think he wants us to go inside," said Magrat.
"I likes it out here," said Granny.
"I likes it out here, thank you," she repeated.
Granny Weatherwax's approach to foreign tongues was to repeat herself loudly and slowly.
"Here, you stop trying to take our table away," snapped Nanny, thumping his hands.
The innkeeper spoke hurriedly and pointed up the street. Granny and Magrat glanced inquiringly at Nanny Ogg. She shrugged.
Didn't understand any of that," she admitted.
"We're stopping here, we are, thank you," said Granny.
The innkeeper's eyes met hers. He gave in, waved his hands in the air in exasperation, and went inside.
"They think they can take advantage of you when you're a woman," said Magrat.
She stifled a burp discreetly and picked up the green bottle again. Her stomach was feeling a lot better already.
"That's very true. Do you know what?" said Nanny Ogg. "I barricaded myself in my room last night, and a man didn't even try to break in."
"Githa Ogg, sometimes you..."
Granny stopped as she caught sight of something over Nanny's shoulder.
"There's a load of cows coming down the street," she said.
Nanny turned her chair around.
"Oh, must be that bull thing Magrat mentioned," she said. "Should be worth seeing."
Magrat glanced up. All along the street, people were craning out of every second-story window. A jostle of horns and hooves and steaming bodies was approaching rapidly.
"There's people up there laughing at us," she said accusingly.
Under the table, Grebo stirred and rolled over. He opened his good eye, focused on the approaching bulls, and sat up. This looked like being fun.
"Laughing?" said Granny.
She looked up. The people aloft did indeed appear to be enjoying a joke. Her eyes narrowed.
"We're just going to carry on as if nothing is happening," she declared.
"But they're quite big bulls," said Magrat nervously.
"They're nothing to do with us," said Granny. "It's nothing to do with us if a lot of foreigners want to get excited about things. Now, pass me the herbal wine."
As far as Lagrote Cabona, innkeeper, could remember the events of that day, they seemed to happen like this. It was the time of the thing with the bulls, and the mad women just sat there drinking absinthe as if it was water. He tried to get them to come indoors, but the old one, the skinny one, just shouted at him. So he let them bide, but left the door open. People soon got the message when the bulls came down the street with the young men of the village after them. Whoever snatched the big red rosette from between the horns of the biggest bull got the seat of honour at that night's feast, plus, Lagro smiled a smile of 40 years' remembrance, a certain informal but highly enjoyable relationship with the young women of the town for quite some time after. And the mad women just sat there. The leading bull had been a bit uncertain about this. Its normal course of action would be to roar and paw the ground a bit to get the targets running in an interesting way, and its mind wasn't able to cope with this lack of attention. But that hadn't been its major problem, because its major problem had been 20 other bulls right behind it. And even that ceased to be its major problem, because the terrible old woman, the one all in black, had stood up, muttered something at it, and smacked it between the eyes. Then the horrible dumpy one, whose stomach had the resilience and capacity of a galvanized water tank, fell backwards off her chair, laughing, and the young one, that is, the one who was younger than the other two, started flapping at the bulls as if they were ducks. And then the street was full of angry, bewildered bulls and a lot of shouting, terrified young men. It's one thing to chase a lot of panicking bulls, and quite another to find that they're suddenly trying to run the other way. The innkeeper, from the safety of his bedroom window, could hear the horrible women shouting things to one another. The dumpy one kept laughing and shouting some sort of battle cry. "Try the horseman saw Desmi." And then the younger one, who was pushing her way through the animals as if being gored to death was something that only happened to other people, found the lead bull and took the rosette off it with the same air of concern as an old woman may take a thorn out of her cat's paw. She held it as if she didn't know what it was or what she should do with it. The sudden silence affected even the bulls. Their tiny little bloodshot brains sensed something was wrong. The bulls were embarrassed. Fortunately, the horrible women left on a riverboat that afternoon, after one of them rescued her cat, which had cornered 25 stone of confused bull and was trying to toss it in the air and play with it. That evening, Lagro Te Cabona made a point of being very, very kind to his old mother. And the village held a flower festival next year, and no one ever talked about the thing with the bulls ever, ever again. At least, not in front of the men. The big paddle wheel sloshed through the thick brown soup of the river. The motive power was several dozen trolls under a sunshade, trudging along an endless belt. Birds sang in the trees on the distant banks. The scent of hibiscus wafted across the water almost, but unfortunately not quite, overpowering the scent of the river itself. "Now this," said Nanny Og, "is more like it." She stretched out on the deck chair and turned to look at Granny Weatherwax, whose brows were knitted in the intense concentration of reading. Nanny's mouth spread in an evil grin. "You know what this river's called?" she said.
"No."
"It's called the Vukes River."
"Yes?"
"Know what that means?"
"No."
"The old masculine river," said Nanny.
"Yes?"
"Words have sex in foreign parts," said Nanny, hopefully. Granny didn't budge.
"Wouldn't be at all surprised," she murmured. Nanny sagged.
"That's one of Desiderata's books, isn't it?"
"Yes," said Granny. She licked her thumb decorously and turned the page.
"Where's Magrat gone?"
"She's having a lie down in the cabin," said Granny, without looking up.
"Tummy upset?"
"No, it's her head this time. Now be quiet, Gither, I'm having a read."
"What about?" said Nanny cheerfully.
Granny Weatherwax sighed and put her finger on the page to mark her place. "This place we're going to," she said, "Genua. Desiderata says it's decadent." Nanny Ogg's smile remained fixed.
"Oh, yes," she said. "That's good, is it? I've never been to a city before."
Granny Weatherwax paused. She'd been pondering for some while. She wasn't at all certain about the meaning of the word decadent. She'd dismissed the possibility that it meant having 10 teeth in the same sense that Nanny Ogg, for example, was unident. Whatever it meant, it was something Desiderata had felt necessary to write down. Granny Weatherwax did not generally trust books as a means of information, but now she had no choice. She had a vague idea that decadent had something to do with not opening the curtains all day. "She says it's also a city of art, wit, and culture," said Granny.
"Oh, we shall be all right there, then," said Nanny confidently.
particularly noted for the beauty of its women, she says here.
We shall fade right in, no trouble.
Granny turned the pages carefully. Desiderata had paid close attention to affairs all over the disc. On the other hand, she hadn't been writing for readers other than herself, so her notes tended to the cryptic and were aide-memoir rather than coherent accounts. Granny read, Now L rules the city as the power behint the throne, and Baron S, they say, has been killed, drowned in the river. He was a wicked man, though not, I think, as wicked as L, for she says she wants to make it a magic kingdom, a happy and peaceful place, and when people do that, look out for spies on every corner, and no man dare speak out, for who dares speak out against evil done in the name of happiness and peace? All the streets are clean, and axes are sharp. But E is safe, at least, for now L has plans for her. And Mrs. G, who was the Baron's amour, hides in the swamp and fights back with swamp magic. But you cannot fight mirror magic, which is all reflection. Fairy godmothers came in twos, Granny knew. So that was Desiderata and L. But who was this person in the swamp?
Githa, said Granny.
Was that?
Said Nanny Og, who was dozing off.
Desiderata says some woman here is someone's armour.
Oh, it's probably a metaphor, said Nanny Og.
Ow, said Granny darkly. One of them things.
But no one can stop Mardi Gras, she read. If anything can be done, it be on Samadhi Nwit Mort, the last night of Carnivali, the night halfway between the living and the dead, when magic flows in the streets. If L is vulnerable, it is then, for Carnivali is everything she hates.
Granny Weatherwax pulled her hat down over her eyes to shield them from the sun. It says here they have a great big carnival every year, she said. Mardi Gras, it's called.
That means fat lunchtime, said Nanny Og, international linguist. Garcon, et cetera gross mint tulip avec petit bowl de peanuts, pour favor.
Granny Weatherwax shut the book. She would not, of course, admit it to a third party, least of all another witch, but as Genua drew nearer, Granny was becoming less and less confident. She was waiting in Genua, after all this time, staring at her out of the mirror, smiling. The sun beat down. She tried defying it. Sooner or later, she was going to have to give in, though. It was going to be time to remove another vest. Nanny Og sat and drew cards for her relatives for a while, and then yawned. She was a witch who liked noise and people around her. Nanny Og was getting bored. It was a big boat, more like a floating inn, and she felt certain there was some excitement somewhere. She laid her bag on her seat and wandered away to look for it. The trolls plodded on. The sun was red, fat and low when Granny Weatherwax awoke. She looked around guiltily from the shelter of her hat brim in case anyone had noticed her asleep. Falling asleep during the day was something only old women did, and Granny Weatherwax was an old woman only when it suited her purposes. The only spectator was Grebo, curled up on Nanny's chair. His one good eye was fixed on her, but it wasn't so terrifying as the milky white stare of his blind one.
Just considering our strategy, she muttered, just in case.
She closed the book and strode off to their cabin. It wasn't a big one. Some of the staterooms looked huge, but what with the herbal wine and everything, Granny hadn't felt up to using any influence to get one. Magrat and Nanny Og were sitting on a bunk in gloomy silence.
I feels a bit peckish, said Granny. I smelled stew on the way here, so let's go and have a look, eh? What about that?
The other two continued to stare at the floor.
I suppose there's always pumpkin, said Magrat. And there's always the dwarf bread. There's always the dwarf bread, said Nanny automatically. She looked up, her face a mask of shame. Esme, you know the money?
The money what we all gave you to keep in your knickers for safety, said Granny.
Something about the way the conversation was going suggested the first few pebbles slipping before a major landslide.
That's the,
money I'm referring to.
The money in the big leather bag that we were going to be very careful about spending, said Granny.
You see, the, money...
Oh, that money, said Granny.
Is, gone, said Nanny.
Stolen?
She's been gambling, said Magrat in tones of smug horror, with men. It wasn't gambling, snapped Nanny. I never gamble. They were no good at cards. I won no end of games.
But you lost money, said Granny.
Nanny Ogg looked down again and muttered something.
What? Said Granny.
I said I won nearly all of them, said Nanny. And then I thought, here, we could really have a bit of money to, you know, spend in the city. And I've always been very good at cripple Mr. Onion.
So you decided to bet heavily.
How did you know that?
Got a feeling about it, said Granny wearily. And suddenly, everyone else was lucky. Am I right?
It was weird, said Nanny.
Hmm.
Well, it's not gambling, said Nanny. I didn't see it was gambling. They were no good when I started playing. It's not gambling to play against someone who's no good. It's common sense. There was nearly $14 in that bag, said Magrat, not counting the foreign money.
Hmm.
Granny Weatherwax sat down on the bunk and drummed her fingers on the woodwork. There was a faraway look in her eyes. The phrase, card sharp, had never reached her side of the Ramtops, where people were friendly and direct, and, should they encounter a professional cheat, tended to nail his hand to the table in an easy and outgoing manner, without asking him what he called himself. But human nature was the same everywhere.
"You're not upset, are you, Esme?"
said Nanny anxiously.
"Hmm.
I expect I can soon pick up a new broom when we get home."
"Hmm. What?"
"After she lost all her money, she bet her broom," said Magrat triumphantly.
"Have we got any money at all?" said Granny.
A trawl of various pockets and knicker legs produced 47 pence.
Right, said Granny. She scooped it up. That ought to be enough, to start with, anyway. Where are these men?
What are you going to do? Said Magrat.
I'm going to play cards, said Granny.
You can't do that, said Magrat, who had recognised the gleam in Granny's eye. You're going to use magic to win. You mustn't use magic to win, not to affect the laws of chance. That's wicked.
The boat was practically a floating town, and in the balmy night air no one bothered much about going indoors. The riverboat's flat deck was dotted with groups of dwarfs, trolls and humans lounging among the cargo. Granny threaded her way between them and headed for the long saloon that ran almost the entire length of the boat. It was the sound of revelry within. The riverboats were the quickest and easiest transport for hundreds of miles. On them you got, as Granny would put it, all sorts, and the riverboats going downstream were always crowded with a certain type of opportunist as fat lunchtime approached. She walked into the saloon. An onlooker might have thought it had a magic doorway. Granny Weatherwax, as she walked towards it, strode as she usually strode. As soon as she passed through, though, she was suddenly a bent old woman, hobbling along, and a sight to touch all but the wickedest heart. She approached the bar and then stopped. Behind it was the biggest mirror Granny had ever seen. She stared fixedly at it, but it seemed safe enough. Well, she'd have to risk it. She hunched her back a little more and addressed the barman.
"Excusez-moi, young homme," she began.
Something about Nanny Ogg rubbed off on people. The barman gave her a disinterested look and went on polishing a glass.
"What can I do you for, old crone?" he said.
There was only the faintest suggestion of a flicker in Granny's expression of elderly imbecility.
"Oh, you can understand me," she said.
"We gets all sorts on the river," said the barman.
"Then I was wondering if you could be so kind as to loan me a deck. I think it's called of, cards,"
quavered Granny.
"Going to play a game of old maid, are you?" said the barman.
There was a chilly flicker across Granny's eyes again, and she said,
"No, just patience. I'd like to try to get the hang of it."
He reached under the counter and tossed a greasy pack towards her. She thanked him effusively and tottered off to a small table in the shadows, where she dealt a few cards randomly on the drink-ringed surface and stared at them. It was only a few minutes later that a gentle hand was laid on her shoulder. She looked up into a friendly, open face that anyone would lend money to. A gold tooth glittered as the man spoke.
"Excuse me, good mother," he said, "but my friends and I," he gestured to some more welcoming faces at a nearby table, "would feel much more comfortable in ourselves if you were to join us. It can be very dangerous for a woman travelling by herself."
Granny Weatherwax smiled nicely at him and then waved vaguely at her cards.
"I can never remember whether the ones are worth more or less than the pictures. Forget me own head next, I expect."
They all laughed. Granny hobbled to the other table. She took the vacant seat, which put the mirror right behind her shoulder. She smiled to herself and then leaned forward, all eagerness.
"So, tell me," she said, "how do you play this game, then?"